You're listening to Green Economy Wheels, a podcast brought to you by Business News Wheels in partnership with Net Zero Industry Wheels, the Celtic Freeport and the Port of Milford Haven.
Hello and welcome to the Green Economy Wheels podcast. I'm Gemma Casey, editor of Business News Wales, and in this episode, we're going to look at unlocking Wales' circular economy potential. Well, the circular economy is a model that designs out waste, keeps material in use for longer, and regenerates natural systems. But as well as the clear environmental benefits, does the circular economy represent a major economic opportunity for Wales? With me to discuss the potential around the circular economy are Ben Maisey, Sustainability and Future Generations Manager at Dawson Environmental Group, Owen Bailey, UK Innovation Manager and Circular Economy Lead at Seven Steel UK, Dr. Gary Walpole, Director at Circular Economy Innovation Communities, which is delivered by Cardiff Met and Swansea Universities, and Stéphane Clisson, Technical Manager at CEMEX. Hi all, and thank you for joining me. So Gary, I'm going to kick off with you if I can. First of all, can you tell us what Circular Economy Innovation Communities, or CEIC, is, please?
We run a programme that supports organisations to firstly understand circular economy principles. We help them develop a carbon reduction plan so they can identify where their carbon footprint is as an organisation. And then we take them through the innovation process through a six-month course where they come in and they do one workshop per month. And that enables them to take one element of the carbon reduction plan that they've looked at and apply circular economy principles to a part of their organisation. So it could be reducing or changing their packaging to reduce their carbon footprint. It might be looking at their business model so that they can servitize some of their products. It could be an entire array of different types of projects that they look at. But in essence, what we do is help them develop their innovation capabilities so that they can implement circular economy principles within their organization.
And Gary, what do we mean by circular economy principles? If it's a phrase that our listeners have heard but aren't quite sure of, how would you define it?
The most popular definition comes from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. And in essence, it suggests is three elements. So firstly, eliminate waste. Waste is a human construct by and large. Nature doesn't waste anything, as we know. A banana comes perfectly wrapped, as does an apple and an orange. If you can't eliminate waste or on the process to do that, the second principle is to circulate products and materials as long as possible. In other words, keep them in the loop. And hence, that's where the term circle comes from. So you keep materials and resources in the loop as long as possible. And the third principle, sometimes less emphasis is placed on this, albeit I think we need to place an awful lot more emphasis on it, is to regenerate natural systems. So that is support our environment and everything that lives within our environment that we rely on, actually, to regenerate. We've lost around 70% of our bird species in the UK in the last 30 years. So those three principles are very important. Eliminate waste, circulate materials and products as long as possible, and regenerate natural systems.
And Gary, would you say then that it's every business's responsibility to be moving from a traditional linear model towards this circular economy model?
Absolutely. Whilst some authors suggest, and I would agree to a certain extent, there is a green economy, as you quite rightly suggest, it's the responsibility of all organisations and individuals, actually, to adopt circular principles.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Owen, so we've heard there how we can define circular economy, and you are the circular economy lead at Seven Steel UK. So tell us a little bit then about how it works in practice for an industry that's traditionally heavy industry, traditionally seen as perhaps the more aligned to the linear model and rather than circular economy. Tell us how it works for you.
Sure. Well, you're right in terms of the traditional steelmaking process is very much the backbone of the linear economy and I suppose the foundation of our industrial revolution. But traditional steelmaking takes iron ore and coal from the earth's crust and processes it through a blast furnace and produces virgin steel. Whereas the type of steelmaking and the process we go through is we use an electric arc furnace. to recycle scrap. So we can take scrap from the general market, and we do take scrap from the general market. We would transform that scrap into new steel, and then we deliver that new steel back into a local or national economy. With Seven Steel, and we are only in existence since April this year as a brand, we've been part of the Celsa Group for 23 years previous to that. And we take scrap metal from the UK market and transform it in the electric arc furnace, roll it into two different types of products, reinforcement steel for concrete structures and sections steel that you might see in electricity pylons or overhead gantries and so on. We then have downstream fabrication businesses dotted around the UK that actually transform the raw material that we produce into a structure that gets delivered directly to construction sites. So that's kind of what we do. I suppose how we're evolving in the context of the circular economy is we're actually engaging with those customers that we traditionally have supplied materials to, because they, when a big project is being developed, it, more often than not, there is an existing asset or existing building that's been there for perhaps decades that needs to come down. So we're offering almost like a service where we can transform the scrap coming from that demolition phase into a new product and ultimately closing the loop by delivering that steel back to the same site. So that's how we're starting to evolve the principles of the concept of the circular economy. If I just could add, just to get what Gary was saying about what circular economy actually is, I think for me, the way I look at it, you have to look at, to define a circular economy, you need to understand what the linear economy is, because circular economy is the opposite. Linear economy is the reason why we feel like we're in this mess, why we have climate change, why we have inequality across society. And in essence, when you look at the UN Sustainable Development Goals, the 17 goals that have been established, and a lot of people agree that that's the way we need to move forward. The linear economy has created the need for those goals. And ultimately, a future circular economy will eliminate the need and make sure we live in a much more equitable and sustainable society.
Thank you, Owen. Gary?
Yes, I was just going to add to what Owen was saying there. So the common perception is that if we moved to clean energy or we stopped using fossil fuels completely, then that would get us to net zero. But that's not the case. So the 2024 UN report, End the Trend, suggested that 60% of the greenhouse gas emissions created come from our linear operating system, our linear production system. That process of taking materials from the ground, manufacturing, and then by and large what we do is then discard or waste.
Thank you. That's really important points, Owen and Gary. Thank you. Ben, let's bring you in here. Can you tell us, first of all, what does Dawson Environmental Group do?
Well, Dawson runs a number of environmental businesses across the South East Wales area primarily, but our services cover the whole of the country. We cover things such as demolition, remediation of land, but central to our business is our waste and recycling business. And part of that is Neil Soil Suppliers. We're proud that Neil Soil Suppliers has contributed to Wales's current status as number two in the world. Neil's has contributed to that figure more than any other Welsh business. And so we take in hazardous and non-hazardous soil and stone and recycle them and put them ready for reuse. As we go through a number of processes to ensure that material is ready for reuse, we then work with partners such as Stefan, who is on the call today, to look at opportunities of how that can actively put back into reuse. It's fantastic that the material comes to us. It's fantastic that we have the facilities to recycle, but we need to complete that chain. And we work with the likes of Cemex and other partners to ensure that material is not only received and recycled, but is actually reused.
Thank you, Ben. Let's bring you in then, Stefan. Tell us what Cemex is.
Yeah, so we are a supplier of raw material and also ready-mix concrete mainly. And obviously that we are aware that it is an industry which is quite CO2 angry, so to speak, producing quite a lot of CO2. So we are very, obviously, striving all the time to try to reduce our CO2 impact. So the way we're using the product, which basically Ben is doing, is we're using a recycled aggregate into a concrete. Obviously, we are quite demanding in terms of high quality standard for our aggregate. we couldn't use anything out in the market. Obviously, the lack of Dawson, they got also very high standard in terms of the processing operation. And it means that essentially we can resubmit that recycled aggregate into the market via our finished product. We have got one particular example in Cardiff. We got site for Channel View where essentially the actual demolition waste is taken to a Dawson operation who goes to us and then it goes back to that particular site. So that's it's a circular economy as literally as good as it gets.
Brilliant, thank you. So Ben, yeah, let's dig into that particular project a bit more then. So Channel View redevelopment in Cardiff, tell us a bit more about Dawson's involvement there.
Dawson comes and it sits in the middle of receiving the waste from the Channel View site, which is run and operated by the Waits Group, one of the largest construction and development groups in the UK. So if they would bring their construction waste to ourselves through our partner group, Atlantic Recycling, which is part of the Dawson Environmental Group. As part of that process, we segregate the aggregate and inert side of that material and take that to our neighboring sister company, which I've already mentioned, Neil Soil Suppliers. Through that system, there's a rigorous process to ensure that material is then ready for reuse, which I've noted earlier on. And then through testing and what Stefan has just made sure that he emphasized, the quality of the material is ready to go out. We then look for opportunities to send this out. Now, some things have laid very well in our path. Waits are in our vicinity within Cardiff. CEMEC just down the road in the Cardiff Docks area. We are all in the same locality and having a big construction project, having a big wash plant and soil recycling facility and having a cement manufacturer all within sight of each other is very unique. But I do believe some of the principles that we have found coming together and delivering this project is noteworthy of anybody else considering how are they going to adopt the best circular economy principles when looking at any particular material stream or project. So from our quality testing of the materials suitable for CEMEX, and I'll let Stefan jump back in shortly to say what they have done on their side, because I can't take my hats off enough to CEMEX and especially Stefan. The work, the investigation to ensure that this material is then suitable for construction reuse has been immense. But it was seen that it was worth going through that work to ensure that the material was not lost, that it could be reused and it could go straight back to that specific project which originated the waste in the first place. And I'm happy to talk about some of the principles that we have found work very well, but I'm happy to let Stefan have some time and talk about the work that he's done to ensure that that material was ready and suitable to go back into reuse.
Yeah, essentially what tend to happen with the use of recycled aggregate is if you don't get really high quality recycled aggregates, then you need to overcompensate to reach, let's say, the same strength of the product or this kind of thing. And of course, by overcompensating, you're actually adding things like cement. So you're back into the bad books, if you want, in terms of adding some more CO2. So you're taking one side from one side and you put it back on the other side. So that is where the quality is extremely important to us. And also, it is fair to say that there are a number of operations. Your Dawson is one second to none in terms of the quality of the product. There are also, unfortunately, a lot of operations that give a bad name to that industry. And that's why we keep a really tight monitoring on the quality of the material.
Thank you, Stefan. And I'm interested to know as well, Stefan and Ben, how innovative is this? You know, it sounds like an incredible project. And Ben, you've already emphasized the fact that this is all happening within a few sort of square miles, which is obviously, again, boosts the sustainability credentials. But is this quite an unusual project in the construction industry at the moment?
Sorry, Ben, if I chip in first. Essentially, what is the idea of using recycled aggregate is not a new idea. I've done quite a few years in the ready-mix industry, and that was then when I started 25 years ago. The however to that is, one, the quality which is on offer at the moment, and the second thing is, you know, knocking all these barriers of getting this specified and talking to our customer, because that is where the industry of the construction industry tend to be a bit conservative on that sense. So to actually put across this kind of product is not necessarily an easy one, but it does get easier as people talk a lot, not quite naturally. And once one site realizes, oh, your next doors are using that, then suddenly they're a lot more relaxed to use that as well.
Yeah, Ben, what lessons are there for the construction industry from this project?
I checked the discussion back to Stefan earlier on because I wanted to focus in on the main point that I think has worked well and has sold the project, and that is quality at every aspect of us recycling at Neil Soil Suppliers to the work that Stefan and Cemex have undertaken to ensure that there is quality at the heart. Some people think that when things go into the circular economy, there is a diminished quality that comes around. That is not the case. When there's time, when there's investment, when there's innovation of processes, of technology to make sure that the circular economy can happen and it can retain quality of materials, then that is a massive boost and a confidence to those people who are receiving those materials. And we really do have a lot of challenges of developments across Wales who are not receiving the recycled lab aggregates back into to building for one reason or another. And it's hopefully through projects like ourselves that will start to build that confidence and give that trust to development projects. But something else that Stefan rightly put into his conversation comments, I think it's been fantastic that the whole supply chain has collaborated together on this. And that as individual businesses, we all had the shared goals and the shared vision of sustainability, of circular economy. And it's because we all had that, we were able to have that discussion together and put the links together. I think, frustratingly, there are too many people working in silos and they're not really linking their services together. I think for the circular economy to happen, and I know that some businesses want to protect their business and be guarded, but for it to flourish in the way that we've seen through our case study and the work that we're currently doing between ourselves, Cemex and Waites, there has to be collaboration. There needs to be openness. And I think that has been a real principle of how the circular economy is going to be effective. It's not going to be done by one person or another.
I wanted to add to what you were saying, because I think the construction sector itself is going through, in my view, a real evolution. And it's starting to pick up pace, particularly around the concepts of circular economy. But going back to a point that Gary made about decarbonisation and net zero and the kind of the focus on carbon, that sometimes is a massive barrier to circularity, because in construction you have the way they measure impact in construction is through life cycle assessments, and they base the data they put into the life cycle assessments on the emissions that each silo in the process kind of creates. So as a manufacturer, we create an EPD, an environmental product declaration, and that equates to the volume of CO2 that we emit per ton of steel we produce. Now, currently ours is at 374 kilograms of CO2 per ton of steel. When you equate that to virgin steel, it's up around about 2.2 to 2.7 tons of CO2. So that's the marked difference between virgin material and recycled material from a steel perspective. But the problem is, when we look at the life cycle assessment in the current construction environment, it's based upon measuring the negative impacts of a linear economy. So it's only taken our negative emissions as our kind of our qualification to enter into the life cycle assessment. But the value of the resources that we already have, so the value of the resources that Ben and Stefan are reintroducing back into the economy, the value of the resources that we're collecting from sites within the UK, and again, transforming back into the economy, that value has not been recognised because it's not a proper, they talk about carbon accounting. And carbon accounting is not the same as financial accounting. At least in financial accounting, you have an opportunity for profit and a loss quantification. Whereas in carbon accounting, it's only negative emissions. It's only one direction. So what's happening in the industry, in the sector, is that people who are doing things like us around the table here are doing, we're trying to encourage or influence the sector to start adding value in, to account for the value that we already have. So the material resources that we have already existing in the UK, such as the steel, the aggregates, and so on, there's so much more resources. The fact that Wales in particular is number two in the world at collecting those resources, but we can do a lot more. And ultimately, we need everyone else to be on board with as well, to understand that there's real value here. The only way that circular economy is really going to be escalated through the actual economy is when we start to add value to what we're doing. And I think that's the gap that's missing. And while Ben and I and Stefan will do lots of positive things for the construction sector, the sector itself needs to start evolving as well. And it is moving in that direction, but perhaps a little bit slower than we would like. Because ultimately, if we can, and this goes back to, I think, one of the questions on the list about what can Wales do. Wales is in a very unique position to be able to showcase to the rest of the world what a truly circular economy can be. Because we're small enough to be able to engage and collaborate, but large enough to do things at scale. And it's not just about a couple of cafes doing repair, because I think that's still fantastic. But the fact that you have a steel maker and a cement producer being able to introduce and develop and evolve this whole concept at real scale is quite impressive. And I think that's where we can really highlight the true value of circularity. But like I said, we do need the rest of the sector to understand how that's possible.
Thank you, Owen. Gary, can I bring you back in there? So Owen has made some really great points there and thrown down a gauntlet almost for where this discussion needs to go in order for Wales to be recognised as a leader. How do you think we overcome those barriers that Owen has highlighted there?
I think it's been touched on by Ben. So there's a real need for organisations to collaborate across supply chains. If a product is manufactured and you're not, for argument's sake, able to understand the constituent elements of that product, then it's very difficult for it to be used or reused after its first life. And an example from the construction industry, actually. So there's an organization that we've worked with that is currently exploring the feasibility of using the clay and earth that comes from washing the aggregates that Ben has mentioned, and using that within a 3D printer. And there's an organization in Italy that manufactures a piece of kit that's able to manufacture and print small outbuildings from clay. So you could wash the clay from your aggregate, as Dawson are doing, and then form that into a filament for this printer that could print outbuildings. So it's about that collaboration and ensuring every aspect and element of a production process, in this case, obviously, aggregates for concrete and so on, can be used. And I'd just like to quickly mention the Welsh Government innovation team have been innovative. They introduced a new fund called New to Circular Economy. Not a huge amount of money, but £10,000 for organisations to conduct a feasibility study that explores a new circular opportunity. So that idea of using the clay and earth from washing aggregate as a filament for a 3D printer of outbuildings is one of the projects being explored. So I can't say much more about who it is and so on, but that's a great example of where Welsh Government are supporting organisations. It's a pilot fund, so they're only running it for 6 months, and that really can help us to ensure that every material that's used within any process is fully used and kept in the loop as long as possible. And another opportunity that is being funded by that new fund is looking at hemp production in Wales. Now, hemp is grown in Wales and used within some buildings, hempcrete. Hemp's a breathable material and it reduces the carbon footprint of buildings and can be used in passive house builds. That hemp at the moment is being processed in North Yorkshire. And there's a feasibility looking at whether there's a processing facility in Wales would be economic and would benefit Wales. So that's another example of how Welsh government and particularly the innovation team are trying to help push on and develop some ideas around how we can innovate in terms of the circular economy in Wales.
Thank you, Gary. Owen, you were keen to come in there.
Yeah, I think it's obviously the conversation we're having and the people around the table are very much focused on what can be delivered within the context of the construction and the UK built environment. But it's, I think it's worth remembering, or at least reminding ourselves, that circularity can mean different things to different people. And while we're very much talking about resource efficiency and how we can utilize the resources and provide services to industry where those resources can be utilized back into the economy, all of which is really valuable, but we also need to understand that actually there's everyone and anyone can get involved in circular economy, because the one bit that's vitally important to understand about the circular economy is that the economics are the reason why we do this. The primary reason why it will be possible and it will be successful. The added bonus, the happy coincidence, is that we'll start to eliminate our environmental impact and develop a much more equitable society. But when you start looking at the economics and you start looking at how the circular economics can be applied in all aspects of society and industry, there's so many different opportunities for us to evolve this. And I think we're quite unique in Wales in that we have the phenomenal piece of legislation, the world-leading piece of legislation in the World Bank Future Generations Act. And for me, the circular economy is a real opportunity to practically deliver the Act. While we have the legislation and the engagement with public sector doing really good things around policy, linking that policy into what the private sector and the industrial sector can do in Wales is a phenomenal opportunity we haven't quite yet captured yet. Because I think being able to align our procurement policies to how we spend money on materials, such as the materials that we have on offer, back into the building of schools and hospitals and housing infrastructure, is a real opportunity to showcase how the Act can deliver tangible benefits to society and ultimately then how Wales can lead the way in understanding and delivering circular solutions. But when it comes down to other manufacturing capabilities, I think we've lost so much of our manufacturing capability from the UK over the last 20 years. Certainly the last 25 years since I started designing cars in with suppliers in Wales. And then I remember going to the opening or the launch of the Welsh Automotive Forum. And Gareth Rees and Tim Williams gave everyone a catalogue with a list of all the automotive suppliers in Wales. And it was a substantial list. But that list has deteriorated over the last 20 years. And we need to understand how we can bring a lot of those manufacturing capabilities back to Wales. And so by those manufacturing organisations, new organisations, being able to utilise the material resources that we know we have available, and then allowing designers to design new products, new processes, new systems, new services, and linking it to a circular business model is a reality. It's a possibility, and it's certainly an opportunity for us to understand how we can link the values and value of the Wellbeing Act to the value and values of a truly circular economy going forward. So I think there's just so many things we can start to explore. So just, it's worth mentioning, not to get too bogged down in assuming that it's just about recycling waste materials. It's about much more than that, but all of which is of value, and we need to be conscious of continuing to evolve the story and elevate the level of understanding of circularity.
Thank you, Owen. That was really powerful and well put. Gary, you wanted to come in.
Yes, and I'd like to provide what I think is a regenerative example. So the Future Generations Act and some really, I suppose, enthusiastic and what I call maybe environmental champions like Martin at Bluestone in Pembrokeshire. So Bluestone, I would regard as a regenerative resort, and they're a wonderful example of what can be done. 400 odd accommodation units on Bluestone, around 200,000 people, guests go through and spend time there each year. So it's an example of a village, I think, and how circular could be provided. They're completely fossil fuel free. So there's no fossil fuels used on site at all. They took the bold step of refusing to sell single-use plastic water bottles on site. In the process, losing some profit from those shops, they installed water dispensers throughout the site so people could use their water. They do things like using the vegetable oil that's within their kitchens. They have that process to use as HVO. So that oil is then used in some of their vehicles. All of the equipment on site that can be electrified is, including the little four-wheel buggies that the greenkeepers and woodland restorers use. They're a wonderful example of what can be done. And they've eliminated their scope 1 and 2 emissions, and they're now working on their scope 3. So it can be done. They've done it with some support from Welsh Gov in terms of funding for some projects. It demonstrates that circular is not just about industry, but it's also about individual actions. And for me, the top of the Kircher 10 R's, which is an easy and intuitive model, they have refused some practices like selling single-use water bottles, foregone profit, but they've done it for the right thing. And that's where we need to understand as well that it can be and should be part of all of our daily activities. And when you take into account that one fizzy drink manufacturer is likely this year to put about 160 billion bottles of fizzy drink onto the market, and only around 10% of those bottles will be recycled, that starts to give you an insight of what we can do as individuals as well as organizations. And unfortunately, around 20% of those bottles are likely to be discarded, around 20% will be incinerated, and 49%, 50% will be landfilled. And what we know from recent medical studies is that there are microplastics in our seas, there's microplastics in different parts of our bodies, and that's just one product that we should refuse to use.
Thank you, Gary. Now, staying with you for a moment. So Owen has spoken about the potential impact on the Welsh economy of adopting these principles. Gary, in your opinion as an academic who's working in this area, what is the size of the prize on offer to Wales? From an economic development point of view, you've talked there about the benefits to the planet, but what about the potential benefits to the Welsh economy?
I think there are opportunities. The CBI last year suggested that the green economy, not sure I'm overly keen on the phrase, is growing at 9% per annum. And yet, as you would probably know, the general economy is growing at 0.1%. Not that I think that growth should be pursued as a single measure. Very little has been published on regional and sort of national opportunities. But I know, for argument's sake, the ReLondon, London has published around this, and they suggest that a circular economy could add 7 billion per year to their economy by 2030, and suggest around 40,000 new jobs and 12,000 additional net jobs as part of that move. So there is definitely opportunity, and I think it can create value for regional economies. So to give you one small example from our program, an organization, Star Linen, who supply pillows and duvets and other bedding to large hotels across the UK, employ 16 people. They've gone from bringing in about 80% of their materials from outside of the UK to completely flipping that to actually securing 80% of their materials from within the UK. They've servitized. That's one area that you can focus on as an organization. They've servitized duvets and pillows, so they now take those back from the various hotels that they sell them to, and then they reuse, recycle those at the end of their first life. So they're now processed and they go to a manufacturer that creates protective equipment, including things like stab vests, and into the automotive industry, where that material is used for sound baffles within the doors and the underneath of bonnets of cars. So that gives you an example of how it can, even a basic organization, but even a basic product like duvets and pillows can be servitized and can be made circular. They've increased their profits, they've grown their organization, and they're enabling that those circular mindsets to be introduced in what we would traditionally suppose within a service industry that's not necessarily possible.
Thank you, Gary. Owen,
I'm not going to give you any percentages of the size of the prize, but just to give an example of what's currently happening within the UK and particularly the linear economic process, the UK produces between 10 and 12 million tons of scrap metal every year from the end of life of cars, the end of life of buildings, and anything really from the materials that we throw out of our houses. 80%, or if not more actually, I think it's more like 87% of all that scrap material is exported out of the UK. Now, there's a number of reasons why that is. One is that it's a global market and the other countries are willing to pay a lot more for the scrap that is available in the UK, and large volumes are leaving the shores every year. The second is that we don't have, or we haven't had, enough processing capability, so enough steelmakers using the electric arc furnace process to be able to capture and utilise that valuable resource to introduce into the economy. We process 1.2 million tonnes of that every year. So we produce around 1.1 million tonnes of steel from our site in Cardiff. Obviously, and it's pretty topical at the moment, the Tata Steel are going through their transition. I don't a lot of negative press about the closing of the blast furnace. And I know it's affecting people in Port Talbot quite heavily and the wider supply chain. However, I think it's a really positive thing for the region, certainly positive for Wales, that we will now have a second steelmaker using electric arc furnace in Wales, which will be able to use an additional 3 million tonnes of scrap. And while we utilise, the majority of our scrap is sourced from, certainly within the UK, but more often than not within Wales, it means that we will have in the next couple of years the capability to take a lot more of that valuable resource and be able to reintroduce it back into the Welsh and UK economy. Whereas before, it's seen as a commodity that's just exported. And when it's been exported, it goes to countries like Turkey, like China, like Morocco, like Egypt. It is recycled. And if anyone questions whether scrap steel is recycled, the majority, I think 99% of scrap is recycled. But 87% of it is not recycled in the UK. And it comes, and they don't have the same environmental regulations in those countries. They don't have the same labour rights in those countries. And what ends up happening is that they're supplying a cheaper version of that steel back into the UK with a much higher carbon footprint. And this needs to be understood, because one of the real opportunities, and I mentioned already, to deliver truly circular economy is procurement and procurement policies, not only from a government perspective, but an individual developer or manufacturer perspective. So understanding where your stuff comes from is vital to making sure you're delivering that transparency and traceability that we know is possible and within the circular economy. And collaboration, obviously, as Ben has mentioned already, is a way of doing that. But that gives you an example of perhaps the size of the prize when we start utilising the resources that we have available in the UK. And foundation industries like ours, who are effectively producing and processing steel, ceramics, cement, glass, these are, as they're called, foundation industries, these are the industries that are supplying the materials into, and plastics obviously being in, are supplying the materials into all other industry. And if we have a grasp and a true understanding of what circular economy is, it means that those designers who are designing the new products, the new process, new business models that allow for longevity, know and have the assurance that their supply chain is there, willing and ready to supply the materials that they want to utilise.
Thank you, Owen. And that brings me really neatly on to the final question I want to pose to each of you in this episode. And that is, I'd like you to reflect on the key milestones that you think we need to see over the next decade in order to bring Wales much more firmly down the road of a truly circular economy. Gary, can I start with you, please?
Yes, as the UN report that came out in August suggested, we need to move far more quickly. And we need to adopt circular principles. For me, a carbon type tax that would be added to high emitters would help, because what we know is that monetary or fiscal nudges tend to encourage behaviour. We do have extended producer responsibility coming in. I don't personally think the levies are high enough. And we need to start taxing items that we, by and large, don't need. And for me, that's items like single-use plastic bottles. And some of what's the fizzy drinks, are they adding much to our health? No. And so for me, Welsh Government needs to focus hugely more on supporting organisations, move their both their thinking and their production processes and their service models to circular principles. A major element of this, as Owen suggests, is procurement, and the procurement of our large organizations, our health boards, Welsh government, local authorities. If they can shift and encourage support organizations that supply them, and to give you an example, about 80% of a health board's carbon footprint comes from what they purchase. And obviously they've got influence on that supply chain. If they can work with those suppliers to reduce and move towards circular principles and circular operating models, and we need to do that in the next 5 years. We don't have 10 or 20 to do this.
Very clear message. Thank you, Gary. Stefan, what are the key milestones you'd like to see Wales achieve?
Yeah, I think at the moment at CEMEX, we always strive to work with our customer and the community to reduce the CO2 impact of our operation, because we are aware of that impact. And I think thanks to companies like the Dawson Group, South Wales have been able to offer consistent and high quality recycled aggregate to the market. This year alone in South Wales, we produce around 40% of the CEMEX recycled aggregate concrete made in the entire of the UK. Obviously, we're looking forward really to expand this further, this amazing opportunity really. So I think almost I would say that South Wales is there. I know that the ball is rolling kind of thing, and it's almost, I know, for other parts of the country to take this example and spread it around.
That's a lovely positive message. Thank you, Stefan. Ben, what would you like to see the next 5 to 10 years bring?
Yeah, I take Stefan's words. The ball is rolling. And we've seen in Wales this great movement. And you think of what we were doing about 15 years ago, barely anything was being recycled. And now we're second in the world. So that ball is literally continuing to roll, but it now has to roll towards reuse, repair. It needs to roll with innovation, working with academia. Something that the Dawson Group has just recently announced through yourselves, through Business News Wales, is our work with Teesside University, where we're taking construction materials and looking to put those materials into ultra-low carbon materials to supplement concrete products. That is going to take some time, but we're not standing still. We're looking for the next step. We're looking to evolve, and everybody needs to evolve together. And collaboration is key. Collaboration is key throughout the whole of the supply chain. And I really feel as an industry, what needs to change is that continual development of policy, that policymakers are ensuring that the circular economy principles are within, especially public sector procurements, and that they make sure that those elements are emphasized so that the benefits, the environmental benefits that we've talked about today, the social benefits, the job creation, and the economics that come around that can all be realized within the locality. Coming away from that larger picture, though, I do feel that we need to continue to support behavioral change on an individual basis. It was just this morning, I was talking to my daughter about coming onto this podcast about circular economy. And I asked her, and her dad's in the industry, what does that mean to you? She didn't have a clue. She was like, oh, I had something to do with money. I think how we communicate to individuals is really important about how their behaviors of reuse and repair affect the wider community, the wider region. And I was quick just to turn to my daughter, who had just started university at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama and Set Design. Her first ever, and I celebrate this, and this is why I'm sharing it, her first ever lesson was about a theatre green book, about how they take sustainable practices on how they develop a set within the theatre, that they not only reuse items that have been used before in other productions, but how they will use them to ensure that they can be passed on. So my daughter quickly click that, oh, I know exactly what the circular economy is. But I raised this as a point, a very fresh point of a conversation that I had minutes before coming into this podcast today, to emphasize the point that how we communicate circular economy and the benefits of the circular economy and how that is communicated to individuals continues to be monitored and supported in an encouraging way. We've done it very well to get people recycling to this point, but let's continue to encourage those points to individuals.
Great. Thank you, Ben. There's a great point there. And Owen, the final word to you.
Just before I go to the final word, those with just on Ben's point, Ben's story and anecdote, those with a keen eye who watch shows like Casualty and Broadchurch and will actually notice that the set or parts of the set are being reused on multiple shows. So it's something that BBC Wales Drama are doing quite a lot. So keep an eye out. Look, for me, it's how we measure value is vitally important for the future, because I don't believe that GDP and CO2 can be the only two mechanisms of understanding value and impact, because we live in a very complex, beautiful world based on different systems working together. Yet we seem to have simplified it so much within a linear economy that is simply focused on GDP as a measure of value and CO2 as a measure of impact. And that's completely wrong. And one thing that Gary mentioned about carbon tax, I think that's vitally dangerous. If we continue to just measure carbon and assuming that just by taxing those heavy emitters, we will add any value to a circular economy, then I think that's a bit dangerous. Because if we were to tax all the heavy emitters in Wales, then we wouldn't have any manufacturing in Wales. So we need to understand how we, and I think just transition is something that it's a phrase that's been used quite a lot. So it's understanding the value, and particularly when we start to understand the value of our capabilities, our manufacturing capabilities, the resources we have, the people we have, the skills and so on. How do we quantify the value of that? And I think that's not quantifiable in the current mechanism of GDP or CO2. Even GVA is a concept, the gross value, whatever it is, gross value addition. That's not really quantified or measured properly. So there are mechanisms already there that we could utilize, but we need to move beyond this linear thinking in terms of our politics, our policy, our economics. And the economics is clear that we need to understand how we can look at the world through a lens of a circular economy and understand where we can capture the value of those resources, those skills, that knowledge, and the systems we all live within. Then we can start moving forward and developing and living in a world of prosperity and fit for future generations. Because I think we have all the tools we need. We just need to apply them in a very different way.
That is very thought-provoking. Thank you very much, Owen. And thank you to all my guests, to Owen, Gary, Stefan and Ben. And thank you for listening to this edition of the Green Economy Wales podcast.